Good day, and welcome to the FCMB Group PLC's conference call on the impact of Brexit on Nigeria. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Matthew Searle, FCMB's Pan-African Economic Strategist. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on the call today. It's been a week since the U.K. electorate voted to leave the European Union, and I think it's fair to say that there's still a great deal of uncertainty in terms of where we go to from here. But what we're going to attempt to do today is try and make sense of the economic situation and try and give you some advice on how to invest your money in light of new developments. Joining me on the call today is James Ilorie, who is the CEO of First City Asset Management. Also joining us on the call is Bimpe Kontu, who is a lawyer and multifamily office partner here in London and wealth manager who focuses on African clients. The format of the call today will take the form of a macroeconomic overview, which I will provide to you myself. I'll then hand the call over to James Ilorie, who will provide some asset class analysis based on the macroeconomic backdrop, and then Bimpe will talk you through the real estate and immigration issues related to Brexit. So starting off with the macro implications, as I said at the start of the call, there is a great deal of uncertainty. I'm based in London and walking around the streets at the moment, which admittedly voted overwhelmingly to stay in the European Union, there's a palpable sense of disbelief. There's a huge amount of uncertainty as to what happens from here politically. Nobody knows when Article 50, which is the mechanism by which the UK will leave the EU, will be triggered, or indeed if it will be triggered. There have been rumours and suggestions of a second referendum, of Parliament not ratifying the vote, of Scotland vetoing it. Both major political parties here in the UK are going through leadership contests, so there hasn't been any guidance from political leaders. All this is to say that there is a huge amount of uncertainty politically and by extension economically. So any forecasts and analysis must be made and interpreted with the knowledge that things are very fluid and could change at a moment's notice. So with that caveat in place, I would say that we believe, along with most economic commentators, that Brexit is very negative for the UK economy and that growth is likely to slow markedly in 2017 in particular. The uncertainty alluded to above will not come to an end when new party leaders are chosen and when clarity on the timing of the UK's exit is forthcoming. In fact, that will only be the start of the process because from the moment of triggering the exit, the UK will then have 2 years to negotiate how it interacts economically with both the EU and the rest of the world post-Brexit. So there will be 2 years of uncertainty from the moment that the exit clause is triggered. This prolonged period of uncertainty will weigh on investment and confidence here in the UK. At the same time, the weakening of the pound is likely to lead to higher inflation and erosion of purchasing power. At this stage, we don't think that the UK is likely to go into recessionary territory, but I think the risks of that are very real, and if there are any negative shocks, either related to the exit process or indeed from other sources in the global economy, it would not take much to tip the UK economy into recession. Extending from that, I think slower growth in the UK, which is the world's sixth largest economy, I think at the last count, depends where the pound is trading, but it is still a very large and important economy, and so you know the slowdown here will certainly weigh on global growth, and I think that will probably give the Federal Reserve in the US reason for caution in terms of normalizing monetary policy there. So I think, if anything, the Brexit event will push back interest rate hikes in the US. Looking a little bit more closely at the UK economy, the UK runs quite a large current account deficit that was equivalent to 5.2% of GDP last year. In very simple terms, what this means is that the UK is consuming more than it is producing. And therefore it is very reliant on foreign savings or foreign investment to sustain its economic model and to invest. Now, given that foreigners are not going to know how the UK is going to interact with its most important trading partner, the EU, nor with the rest of the world, I think it's very unlikely that foreigners are going to be willing to commit investment to the UK. So that current account deficit is going to be difficult to cover for the United Kingdom. This has two implications. As I said, it will lead to slower growth because there will be less investment and also lower capital flowing into the UK means that the currency is likely to remain under pressure. Now, because growth is likely to slow, we expect the Bank of England to keep monetary policy very loose, and a rate cut is quite likely at the next Bank of England meeting. In fact, Governor Mark Carney yesterday made a very strong hint towards that in a presentation he gave to business leaders here in London. So if that rate cut is forthcoming, as we expect it to be, that will pile the pressure on the currency, and we think that the pound is likely to, if not depreciate from current levels, certainly not recover to anywhere near where it was trading before the Brexit vote happened. Now, of course, a weaker pound, in theory, should be good for UK exports, but there's a bit of a caveat to that too. The fact is that the UK exports the majority of its goods and services, around 50 to 60%, to the EU. So the ability of the UK to benefit from a weaker pound will very much depend on the deal that the UK is able to broker with the EU. If it's not able to broker an attractive deal, obviously the ability for it to export to those markets will be hampered by that deal. So I don't think you can necessarily say that a weaker pound is going to lead to a big uptick in exports, given that the uncertainty with its major trading partner. As I stated before, it's going to take some time for the UK to negotiate its exit from the EU. In an ideal world, from the perspective of the UK, it would like to maintain full access to the single market for goods and services. But EU leaders have come out and said that this will not be possible without also allowing for the free movement of people. And if we take the examples of markets such as Switzerland and Norway, which are not members of the European Union but which do have access to the single market, they are given that access on the basis that they are a member of the Schengen zone, which essentially allows free movements of people into their borders. So the examples that exist suggest that the UK is unlikely to get access to the free markets without free movements of people. Now, immigration was a sort of a central tenet of the Leave campaign. A lot of people, I think, voted to leave the EU based on immigration, so it's very difficult to see a UK leader, once he or she is in place, backing down on allowing free movement of people in order to gain access. At the same time, the EU is obviously very keen to drive a hard bargain with the UK so as not to encourage other countries from pursuing a similar course to the UK. So both the EU and the UK have reasons to dig into their positions, and for this reason we think that negotiations are going to be fraught and a difficult process, and it's going to take some time for certainty to prevail. So I guess the point on the UK economy is that there is a great deal of uncertainty. This is going to lead to an erosion of both consumer and business confidence, which will hurt the pound. It'll lead to higher inflation, lower investment, which ultimately will lead to slower growth here in the United Kingdom. So what does this mean for Nigeria? The first thing to say, I guess, is Nigeria is obviously going through a very difficult period economically, and this difficulty clearly predates Brexit. You know, the factors underpinning these difficulties, which are low oil prices, disrupted oil production, inefficient electricity supply, maybe a couple of questionable policy decisions, among others, will continue to be the most important determining factors for the Nigerian economy going forward. As I'm about to explain, Brexit might have an impact on some of these factors, but they in of themselves will continue to be the most influential determinants of the course of the Nigerian economy. So with that said, at the margin, though, we think that Brexit will be negative for the economy, for the Nigerian economy, that is, and we believe that it could shave up to as much as 1 percentage point of real GDP growth in 2017. At this stage, our GDP growth forecast with Brexit incorporated into that forecast is for growth of 3% next year, and my pre-Brexit forecast was closer to 4%. So it's around a 1 percentage point shaving off of real GDP that we're expecting. We think that there are five potential avenues through which Brexit could impact the Nigerian economy. These are remittance flows, investment flows, oil prices, the currency, and trade. So I'm going to go through each of these in turn briefly. Starting off with remittances, these are one of the most important sources of foreign currency inflows to Nigeria. Nigerians living and working abroad send home around $20 billion per annum through formal channels. That number is probably a little bit higher when you incorporate informal channels. But $20 billion is certainly a large amount of money and a very important source of foreign currency. After the U.S., the U.K. is the second largest source of these remittances. Last year, in 2015, Nigerians living in the U.K. sent $3.7 billion back to Nigeria. That was about 15% of total remittances for the year. So what does Brexit mean for these remittances? Well, the first thing to say is that obviously Nigerians are earning pounds in Nigeria and then sending those back and converting them to naira or dollars and then into naira. With the depreciation of the pound, the dollar value or the naira value of those remittances is going to fall. The pound is already down about 10% against the dollar since the eve of the referendum, and as I've already described, we see it very unlikely that the pound will recover against the dollar for the reasons I've explained. So that depreciation, that 10% depreciation, means that remittances are going to fall in dollar terms, all else being equal. I think the pound could probably depreciate further against the dollar, so I think 10% is the minimum amount. I think it could be more like 15 to 20%. At the same time, I've described how I believe that the UK economy, growth in the UK economy is going to slow. This could well have an impact on employment and real wages here in the UK, and that could affect the pound amount that Nigerians earn to send back. So it's possible that Nigerians will earn less pounds that will be worth less dollars when they get back into Nigeria. So we estimate that anywhere between $500 million to $1 billion in remittance, there could be a fall of anywhere between $500 million and $1 billion in remittance flows as a result of Brexit. Moving on to the second avenue is investment flows. Over the last 9 years, an average of 43% of total investments into Nigeria have come from the UK. Admittedly, some of this will be UK-domiciled funds, portfolio flows from UK-domiciled funds who are raising capital from globally. So that's not necessarily all going to be UK capital. But the fact is that there will be a great deal of uncertainty in terms of financial regulations, in terms of the investment outlook in the UK. So I can't see how Brexit doesn't have an impact on those, some of those flows at least, coming from the UK into Nigeria. So I expect, if not a decline, certainly lower than expected investment inflows from the UK on the basis that Brexit has happened. Moving on to the next potential driver, oil prices. We saw in the immediate aftermath of the Brexit, of the announcement of the Brexit vote, that oil prices fell quite sharply along with other risk assets. That was perhaps a predictable knee-jerk reaction. Oil prices have recovered to some extent since then, and we're not necessarily expecting significant weakness from current levels on the back of Brexit. But I think, as I said before, the chances of an external shock tipping the UK into recession are real, and I think markets will remain extremely sort of jumpy as a result of that. And so it wouldn't take much to send oil prices lower if there is some kind of shock to the system, because I think Brexit has made markets far more jumpy. So, in other words, the downside risks have certainly increased on the back of Brexit. In addition to that, as I mentioned, the UK is the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. Economic slowdown here will mean lower demand for oil than would have been the case in the absence of Brexit. So, you know, with such an important economy slowing down, demand will be weaker, and therefore there'll be less upside impetus for oil prices going forward as a result of Brexit because of lower UK growth. So I think with respect to oil prices, our view is they're not necessarily going to fall from current levels, but the downside risks have increased and the upside potential has been capped by slower UK economic growth. Moving on to the currency, so the first three factors, remittances, investments, and oil prices, are obviously all related to very important supplies of dollars to the Nigerian economy. We think that the outlook for that supply of dollars has deteriorated for each of those, and therefore the obvious sort of extension then is that the naira is likely to remain under depreciatory pressure as a result of Brexit. the currency has been trading at about $280 naira to $1 over recent weeks. We think that pressures could push that to 300 plus as a result of the vote to leave. There have been some questions from our clients here in the UK as to how freely the Naira really is floating, simply because since the change in the currency regime, there hasn't been a huge amount of supplies of dollars returning. The CBN has been the main supplier of dollars. So, you know, there are theories that the CBN is using moral suasion or other means to hold the Naira at its current level of around 280. If that is the case and these depreciatory pressures aren't allowed to manifest in a weaker currency, we think the way they will be manifested is just simply lower dollar liquidity on the interbank markets, and therefore it'll be more difficult for people to buy dollars just if the rate is held at 280. The final thing I'll talk about is trade. Now, I don't necessarily think that Nigeria will... there will be sort of bad news for Nigeria's trade with either the EU or the UK. But I think a lot of countries are looking at the situation now, thinking that now that the UK has left the EU, they will be in a position to negotiate a more preferential trade deal with the UK in the absence of sort of oversight from the EU. In Nigeria's case, and in many other cases, I simply think that this will not be possible. The main reason is that Nigeria trades far more with the EU than it does with the UK, which means that it is unlikely to make a deal with the UK that annoys the EU, because if it does that, it's obviously going to anger its more important trading partner, and it could impact a larger volume of its trade. At the same time, the UK, obviously, as I've described, is very reliant on the EU for its trade, so it is unlikely to be able to make deals with countries like Nigeria that annoy the EU, because that could harm its ability to negotiate a deal with the EU. So I don't think Nigeria will see a significant improvement in its trade arrangements with the UK as a result of Brexit. That brings me to the end of my macroeconomic overview. I'm now going to hand over to James Allori, who is the head of First City Asset Management, to talk through some of the asset class implications. James?
Thank you, Matthew. Good morning. I will do a review of the UK's decision, to leave the EU on FX markets in the UK and in Nigeria, as well as on asset classes such as bonds and equities. Also, I'll share our thoughts on the likely direction of exchange rates, as well as asset prices, as they affect these countries in the near term. I'll now start with the FX markets in the UK. Following the referendum, the pound weakened by more than 11% on a trade-weighted basis against other major currencies. Looking at the pound against the US dollar, the pound fell to roughly about 1.36 to the dollar. That represented an 8% depreciation. And then further, just a couple of days after that, the pound fell further to 1.32. Now, looking at the historical trend of the pound relative to the dollar, we're actually at levels we haven't seen since 1985, and that's all because of the outcome of the UK referendum. Now, in terms of how markets perceive this, markets are looking at the implication of this on economic growth, the prospect for economic growth in the UK, and markets are also taking into consideration the fact that the Bank of England is likely to loosen policy. Looking at the futures implied rate for December 2016, that's currently at 40 basis points, that's 0.40%. When you compare that with the current base rate of 0.5%, that gives an indication really of what markets are expecting in terms of what they expect the Bank of England to do in terms of monetary policy. Also, from a technical perspective, The current support and resistance levels for the GBP, the pound relative to the USD, is 1.142925 and 1.4413. The pound currently trades at 1.3308. Our bias really in the near term is for the pound to weaken. I'll now move to the FX markets in Nigeria. The Naira was largely unaffected by Brexit. This was unsurprising given the fact that the currency is not fully market determined. The exchange rate is not fully market determined. The Central Bank of Nigeria plays an active role in the interbank market. We expect the Naira to trade around 250 to the 300 level at the interbank market in the near term. And key factors to consider are local crude oil production levels. We know that that has significantly decreased, and we're also aware that the government is doing a lot to try to restore production to normal levels. Normal levels imply output of about 2.2 million barrels of crude oil per day. Also, in terms of the price of crude oil in the international markets, we think that would also have an impact on the Naira exchange rate. And lastly, domestic interest rates relative to those offshore. The central bank is under a lot of pressure. The Central Bank of Nigeria is under a lot of pressure to tighten policy as a way of attracting offshore capital to Nigeria. Now, that really is an area to consider. Whether the central bank would tighten policy or not over the near term is anybody's guess. The bias really is we think the central bank is likely to do that. Say 100 to 200 basis points increase in the monetary policy rate. If that happens, that would then make Nigeria more attractive to foreign investors. And if those inflows come in, that would be supportive of the currency. I'll now move to the bond markets, looking at the UK and Nigeria. I'll start with the UK. Following Brexit, we noticed that the yield on the 10-year UK government gilt dropped by over 40 basis points. To less than 1%. This was an historical low looking at the trend of yields for the 10-year gilt. Of course, this was unsurprising given that investors decided to exit riskier assets such as equities for the safety of UK sovereign bonds. We also
Hello.
It appears we might have lost the link to Nigeria there, so I'm going to take over. They will be dialing back in because we did anticipate that this might be a bit of an issue. But moving on from kind of what James was talking about there, the market did react very negatively as a result of the news that the UK had voted to leave the EU. I think that was mainly because the market wasn't expecting that to happen. In fact, the pound was appreciating in the lead up to the election on Thursday night. I think before the end of voting, the pound had rallied to about $1.50 to the sterling. And then as soon as the news came out, it fell as low as 1.32. So I think there has been quite a strong market reaction simply because the vote was unexpected. I guess now it's a question of trying to work out where the pound and other assets will settle. And, you know, that's as part of my presentation, I was talking through the uncertainty, and I think that's the big problem at the moment. Simply nobody knows. You know, if we could all say these are the implications and the pound is likely to fall to 125 because of a fall in trade, because this is the relationship that the UK will have with the EU, I think it would make it a lot easier for businesses to make investment decisions, for consumers to be more comfortable to continue consuming under the new basis. But the fact is that simply nobody knows what's going on. And I think That's been a big part of the referendum issue, that nobody, even the people who are campaigning for the vote to leave, really expected the result to come in their favour. And when it did, they didn't really have a plan in place to implement. So I think with respect to the markets, there is a huge amount of uncertainty, and now it's just a case of seeing where things fall. But as I said during my section of the presentation, that's going to take some time.
Hello, Matthew.
James, are you back?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'll leave hand back over to you in that case.
Okay, thank you. I'll start from looking at the bond markets, starting with the UK. Before we're cut off, I said following Brexit, the yield on the 10-year UK government gilt dropped by 40 basis points to less than 1%. That really was the lowest level on record. But this wasn't surprising, given the fact that investors following Brexit decided to exit riskier assets such as equities for the safety of UK government sovereign for the safety of UK sovereign bonds. We also noticed that yields on 10-year government bonds issued by safe haven countries such as the US, Germany and Japan also fell. In fact, as we speak, the German and Japanese bonds, 10-year bonds, are returning negative yields. That implies that investors are actually paying these governments for the chance to buy bonds issued by them. In general, we expect yields on UK government deals to decrease even further in the near term. This is despite the UK government's credit risk downgrade by both Standard and Poor's and Fitch ratings. Moving on to Nigeria, in reaction to events in the UK, the spread between the two-year US Treasury notes and similar maturity Nigerian government USD Eurobond, specifically the 2018, the July 2018 Eurobond issued by the Nigerian government, the spread between those two instruments widened by 47 basis points to 4.81%. This was still about 240 basis points below its all-time high of 7.2%. Of course, spreads normally widen in times of risk aversion. However, US dollar euro bonds issued by Nigerian financials and the Nigerian domestic sovereign yield curve were largely unaffected by Brexit, the events in the UK. We expect yields on these instruments to continue to be driven mainly by domestic factors in the near term. I'll now move to the equity markets. Start with the UK. Following Brexit, we noticed that the FTSE 100 index fell by more than 8%. However, this eventually gave way to selective bargain hunting, as investors then viewed the sell-off as overdone. The index therefore regained all the previous losses from the sell-off and has actually gained almost 3% since then. We do not expect the rally recorded in the last few days to be sustained, and believe that equity prices would eventually reflect the impact of expected weaker growth and eventual rate cuts. We have the opinion that investors should underweight financials, the UK, construction, and consumer discretionary, and overweight utilities and precious metals. That is taking into consideration the environment we're in, and that's on a short-term view, really. We're adopting a short-term view of the UK equity market. Moving to Nigeria, the Nigerian Stock Exchange All-Share Index decreased by just 1.52% following the UK vote, reflecting the resilience of the markets to events in the UK. That particular event in the UK. We expect sentiment in Nigerian markets to continue to be dominated by factors such as liquidity in the local foreign exchange market, the outlook for the resolution of crude oil production challenges, and prospects for oil price gains. For the Nigerian market, we favor the agriculture and industrial goods sectors of the Nigerian Stock Exchange All Share Index. And that basically is a summary of our view on the equity markets in both the UK and Nigeria. This brings me to the end of the presentation on this section, and I will now hand you over to Ronke Kunchi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to speak briefly on the impact of Brexit on the UK real estate market, as well as the impact of Brexit on the UK immigration policies. Now, as a background to the referendum vote, which happened on June the 23rd, I'd like to just quickly touch on where the UK real estate market was pre-Brexit. The months following up to Brexit had already seen prices softening, especially in London prime real estate, which were prices, say, between the $1 to $5 million mark. I mean, the UK has traditionally been a safe haven for surplus assets for foreign buyers, and the data that we've seen shows that over 50% of London property is currently owned by non-EU persons, mainly from the Middle East, from Russia, from Southeast Asia, and from Africa. Obviously, Nigerians dominate the market as far as the African buyers are concerned. Now, just before the referendum, challenges in the market, the slowdown in the primary real estate market was due partly to the sort of ongoing global market turmoil, but it also wasn't helped by the fact that the UK government increased stamp duty on second homes, and most foreign buyers were buying second homes in the UK, so stamp duty went up by 3%, and the UK government also introduced, in the last 2 years, has introduced some onerous tax regime that actually affects the way foreign buyers tend to hold UK properties using corporate vehicles. And so, you know, foreign buyers had been penalized quite aggressively over the last 2 years, and with, you know, the I would say contributed to the fact that the pre-Brexit UK property market had sort of been in slowdown mode, with prices sort of stagnating. Now, since last Thursday, the impact has been significant. I mean, there's been panic in the markets across the board, but especially as far as the UK market's concerned, domestic buyers who make up the large chunk of people buying in London between, say, 1 to 5 million, are very uncertain of the UK's economic future. Those domestic buyers tend to be either foreigners who are living and working in London, especially in financial services, or just foreign buyers who view the UK as a second home, and again, who have seen the UK property market as a safe haven, where they've been able to actually, you know, hold their assets and see capital growth over the years. Now, this uncertainty in the market has definitely meant that the domestic buyers have slowed down. They're very concerned about their future. People who work in the city, in banks here, who might have to move out of the UK if they can't passport their license out of the EU into the UK, and vice versa. The large banks are already, like HSBC, JP Morgan, are already talking about moving their head offices out of the UK, which would obviously mean that a lot of the foreigners who are attracted to the city will lose their jobs or have to move to whatever EU centre that the banks choose. And obviously, they're not living here. They won't be buying property here. So we're seeing a reduced demand in that sort of 1 to 5 million part of the market. As far as the higher end is concerned, the super prime, which is over 5 million, there hasn't really been any sort of immediate knee-jerk reaction, because the buyers in that threshold tend to be buying for lifestyle reasons and tend to be obviously ultra-high net worth. But again, some of those buyers are seeing opportunities because the prices are softening even at that end, and they might decide to buy anyway and hold long term. But there's a lot of uncertainty. So I think right now the message that most estate agents are getting from their buyers is to wait and see. People are sitting on their hands, waiting to see which way the market goes, waiting to see whether their jobs are affected, and waiting to see whether this economy can bounce back, which from the signs, early signs, is possibly not going to happen in the immediate future. Now, apart from the fact that, you know, there's that uncertainty in the market, the falling pound has also meant that properties currently on the market are already worth probably 10 to 15% less than they were worth last week. So we are also seeing a lot of buyers thinking about renegotiating. If they're in the midst of a transaction, buyers are actually asking to renegotiate the prices that they've agreed, especially if they haven't yet signed the contract. And that is obviously putting a lot of sellers off. And so sellers are probably not going to put their properties on the market unless they're sure and unless they really need to sell. So right now, I would say the best case scenario for the market is prices may remain flat in the prime London market. However, I think we're already seeing 3 to 5% price reductions from last week. And this might fall across the board to as much as 10 to 15% in the next 12 months if, you know, the economy doesn't bounce back from this shock. Now, the other part of the market that I'd like to quickly mention is the new build market, which I know that a lot of foreign buyers are particularly attracted to. And there's a huge oversupply of units coming to the market for the first quarter of next year. There are probably about 200,000 units coming into the market across London, and the developers are already experiencing, you know, buyers who are deciding to withdraw their offers because of this uncertainty. That part of the market will fall significantly, and there will be, I think, challenges for the property developers as well. So I think the current sort of predictions on the UK property market are rather grim. Prices will fall. There's uncertainty in the market. It might be that the opportunities for people who want to buy, but these are resilient buyers who are probably going to look at this as a long-term investment and who are ready to wait out this cycle. So as far as that's as far as the property market is concerned. The other part I'd like to just briefly comment on is the UK's immigration policy post-Brexit. Now, pre-Brexit, the UK already had, I would say, challenges in this area with net migration had been increasing year on year. We saw net migration increase to over 350,000 last year as opposed to 318,000 in 2014. So the UK government was already being challenged by UK voters to reduce this net migration. I think that the domestic market and the UK sort of voters started to feel that they were suffering and there was pressure on public services as a result of the huge migration from, you know, other parts of Europe. So the UK government had already targeted to reduce net migration and had tried to introduce things like stricter policies for admitting non-EU students, family members and workers. The UK government had already also sort of removed a lot of the easier work visas that were available and had actually increased the eligibility criteria for work visas and had as well as had reduced the opportunity for students to stay on and work in this country. So all of this hadn't helped, it appears, because, I mean, it's quite clear that the pundits are saying that the vote to leave was really a vote for control on immigration. I mean, 52% of the people in the UK voted to leave, and I believe that a lot of these people were looking at it from the point of view of this is our chance to ensure that we can restrict that free movement of people, both from within the EU and outside the EU into the UK. Right now, EU law does not restrict the number of EU citizens entering the UK, and obviously the UK had seen a real flood of EU citizens coming into the UK as and when the different countries joined, and over the last 2 years, I think that we've had over a quarter of a million EU citizens moving to the UK into the job market, and I believe there's been resentment from in typical sort of Britons feeling that this has been a undue pressure on the UK economy. Now, post-Brexit, we're expecting there should be some discussions around this free movement of people. You know, the EU president has obviously said that the UK in order to negotiate any continued access to free trade within the EU, will also have to continue to take on the burden of free movement of people. There's no clarity on what will happen, because obviously Article 50 has not yet been invoked, and therefore the real negotiations around the UK's position in this sort of divorce is yet to be known. However, if the UK voters are to get their way, and if those who voted to exit are to get their way, they will be expecting that there should be some restrictions on free movement, and there should be some increased immigration restriction on people coming in from within and outside the EU. This will obviously affect, you know, Africans who are already obliged to obtain visas, both to come in to live, work, and even to enjoy their vacations. So we're seeing that this will impact definitely on African clients who are thinking of, you know, traveling in and out of the UK. Now, as far as the UK passport is concerned, and that's a key part of, I would say, the UK's sort of immigration status, the UK passport has traditionally been a very attractive passport for a lot of African families who seek to have multiple passports. We all appreciate that multiple passports enable people to travel, you know, visa-free, not just to the UK, but to other parts of the world who actually, you know, respect and value the UK passport. For the US, for example, you know, we all know we can enter the US for up to three months without getting a visa if you have a UK passport. And therefore, the UK passport had traditionally been valued on what we call the Quality of Nationality Index and had been at number 11 in terms of the best passports to have. I mean, the other countries which were ahead of the UK on the Nationality Index are countries like Germany and France and Denmark. Now, the UK was number 11. As soon as the Brexit results were announced, the UK fell to number 30. And as a result, people are seeing the UK passport as something that's less valuable to have. And the criteria for, you know, the value of the UK passport has always been, you know, a country with a good economic health, a country where, you know, the ability to enter the country to live and work here easily, there's peace, stability. All of these things make the UK passport, you know, very, very attractive. The Brexit and whatever policies that Article 50 will bring with it, the chance it will probably make this passport less attractive, and therefore, you know, people who have a UK passport currently are all looking for alternative EU passports. And the Irish Embassy has actually said in the last 1 week that they've had an increase in inquiries for people who are actually applying to, who have any Irish connection, applying for their Irish passports, because that way they can stay in the EU and enjoy that continuous free movement of travel. I think in a nutshell, that's those are my comments on the property, UK property market and the effects post-Brexit, as well as the UK immigration policies. But as we all know, it's a continuous and fluid set of events, and we're just watching this space. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bimpe. Very enlightening. That brings us to the end of the presentation section of our call today. What we'd like to do now is give all of our listeners and online guests the opportunity to ask questions. So, operator, I don't know if you're listening, if you can talk our participants through how they're able to ask a question.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star or asterisk key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. Once again, that's star 1 to ask a question.
Thank you, operator. While people are building up the courage to ask questions, maybe I'll put one to both James and Bimpe. The theme of our presentation, I guess, was uncertainty. That certainly is sort of the catchphrase regarding Brexit at the moment. And I was certainly very guilty of that in my section. But I'm going to put both of you on the spot now. If you had your money to invest. Is now a good time to buy UK property and UK equities? UK property for you, Bimpe, would you put your money into it now?
Purely as an investment, I mean, I live in the UK, so, you know, buying would be, it could either be to live in or as an investment. Purely as an investment, no, not right now. I'd probably wait another 6 months because I think prices will soften. Unless I see a real bargain and unless the seller is realistic and actually can give a big discount, I think I'd wait.
Okay, James, equities?
Okay, for investors who still want to be exposed to UK equities, I would suggest the switch. I talked about the sectors to underweight, financials, construction, and consumer discretionary, and advice to that investors overweight utilities and precious metals. Now, in specific terms, utilities, I probably would be looking at National Grid. I think in this environment, it's seen as a sort of safe stock. In terms of its market, 55%, roughly 55% of revenues come from the U.S. and then the balance from the U.K. So it's not as exposed to, events in the local UK market relative to other companies in other sectors. So I would recommend National Grid. And for precious metals, I probably would be looking at Rand Gold Resources. Rand Gold Resources, because the company basically focuses on the production of gold. It mines gold, and an environment where you have a flight to safety. Gold is seen as a hedge, one against inflation. You talked about the risk of high inflation in the UK, as well as a hedge against uncertainty generally. So I would recommend Rand Gold Resources. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for that, James. We've had one question come in from our online platform. I guess this one's for you, Bimpe, and I think you touched on it in your presentation, but I guess it's from someone who's negotiating a deal in real estate. Can I renegotiate prices of real estate deals that I'm undergoing?
Normally, and speaking as a lawyer, if you haven't signed the contract, if you haven't exchanged contracts, you can always renegotiate, and that's even been the deal pre-Brexit. It's always been the norm. So if you've made an offer, it's been accepted, and your lawyers are going through all the sort of due diligence on the property, but you haven't actually paid the 10% and signed the contract. You might have paid a small reservation deposit, but if you haven't paid the 10% that goes with the contract, you can renegotiate. Now, if you have paid the 10%, now, I think that there's been some debate as to whether the Brexit, this occurrence can be a force majeure occurrence that might actually enable parties to go back to negotiate. I would say at the moment it isn't. It's not an act of God. It's something that was always there because even the membership of the EU was something that was optional, and we voted to go in, so we could vote to leave. However, some of high value transactions, there are clauses that actually say if the EU can, in the last couple of years, when the referendum was being debated, some of these property contracts had clauses saying if the UK does leave the EU, this contract would be subject to renegotiation, or actually specifically naming this as a force majeure event. And if that's the case, then it's worth the client talking to their lawyers and saying, is there any potential exit clause in my contract that allows me to renegotiate or pull out completely? If there isn't, and if you haven't got that clause expressly, and if your legal advice is that this isn't the force majeure event, then you're probably bound by the price that you've agreed, and you'll have to proceed at that price.
Okay, thank you. And sort of extending on from that, and again, I'm going to put you on the spot. I mean, do you have a sense of by how much one could renegotiate downwards? I mean, are we talking a magnitude of 5 to 10%, or is it bigger than that, or is it impossible to say at this stage?
Well, to be honest, at the top end of the market, there's already been, people renegotiating at 3 to 5%. And definitely when we're looking at even properties that have been on the market, people are offering 10% less than the asking price right now.
So if you're actually just making an offer on a property that's just come on the market, you would be definitely within your rights to make a discounted offer, and I think the seller will have to actually listen to you because that would be valid. But if you're already in through the negotiation and you haven't signed the contract, you might pull back, try and pull 3 to 5% off the asking price.
Thank you. Just a reminder, it's star one to ask any questions. We also have an online system here. James, one's coming for you on that, and I think you kind of alluded to it in the question I asked you, but what UK equities would you recommend? You mentioned National Grid and Rangold. Is there anything else that you could recommend?
In the current environment, really, it's difficult to recommend a lot of other stocks out there. One has to be very careful. Remember the risk warning, the value of investments may rise or fall, and investors may not get back the full amount invested. Now, in a volatile environment, really, you want to normally underweight equities and overweight less risky asset classes, such as bonds and money market instruments. But if you're investing in equities, one has to be very, very careful. I am comfortable recommending those two stocks. If the investors out there who want additional information on what other stocks are out there in the UK that they can invest in, we're going to share details of the presentation with them. The presentation has our contact details, and they can shoot me an email directly, and we can have a further discussion really on appropriate investment opportunities in the equity market in the UK.
Thanks, James. Yes, as James mentioned, we do have a presentation related to the call today. For those of you who provided your email addresses, we will be emailing that presentation to you. Alternatively, it will be available from the investor relations section of our website. So that's www.fcmbgroupplc.com/investor-relations. I'll repeat that. It's www.fcmbgroupplc.com/investor-relations. So the presentation will be available there. There will be contact details on there as well, so you can get in touch directly with James or Beam Pet to ask further questions. Operator, if we don't have any other pending questions, I think we can bring the call to a close.
We do have one question queued from Vizzy Ola of Independent Investors Limited. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello. I've got two questions, actually. The first, I think, is for James. James, where do you see the base rates in the UK by the end of the year? The second question is for CJ. In your professional opinion, are you saying that with Brexit, people looking at needing visas to travel out of the country to certain countries? And if so, what kind of timeline do you think this is going to be announced by? Thank you.
Okay, in terms of where we see the UK base rate by the end of the year, remember we said economic growth in the UK is likely to be weaker going forward. We think that's very, very key. And my colleague Matthew mentioned the governor of the Bank of England's statement yesterday, which sort of gave an indication on the direction of monetary policy in the UK going forward. For us, we think that rates, the base rate is going to fall. By how much or by what percentage, we can't say for sure, but we think that you probably would see at least one rate cut. So if we assume one rate cut is going to be for maybe 25 basis points, then you probably would say the base rate would close the year at 0.25%.
Now, as far as the immigration policy of the UK for, you know, post-Brexit is concerned, we're still waiting to see what will happen. There's going to be the major part of negotiations that will have to take place between the UK and the rest of the EU is this issue of free movement of people within the EU. And so, you know, right now, most of the people who voted to leave the EU were voting really in favour of stricter immigration policies for the UK. Now, the UK probably has to be very careful about trying to impose any immigration restrictions on EU people from coming from the EU, because the quid pro quo is if the UK were to impose visas on citizens of other European countries, the UK might find itself also being restricted as far as access to that huge sort of free trade zone that they've been part of within the EU. The president of the EU has made it very clear that the UK cannot sort of be selective. They can't choose to want access to free trade within the EU, and yet, you know, try to exclude people coming into the UK to live and work from the EU. So there's going to be a lot of negotiation on this point. I think people believe that at the end of the day, and then don't forget that there are a lot of people from here living in the UK already. There's probably over, you know, quite a few million people living in the UK who are already from the EU, who already have the right to live here, have invested here. And how does this sort of new post-Brexit situation deal with their own future? So my own personal sort of prediction is the UK probably will not impose any sort of strict visa requirements for entering from the EU. And perhaps what they might have to do to balance the flow of people coming in from outside the UK would be to impose stricter visa requirements on non-EU people in order to balance the flow of immigration. But, you know, it's still very much a wait and see. And until Article 50 has been actually triggered, and the UK will need to formally advise the EU member states that it intends to leave, until that's been done, these negotiations won't take place. So it's all subject to a lot of speculation at the moment. So until that time, nothing changes. You know, the right to move around freely within the EU remains. And so far, until the UK announces otherwise, I think the current visa restrictions are non-EU.
The participant's line appears to have disconnected.
I thought so. Okay.
Well, that probably is a good time to end the call. Thank you both, Vincent and James.
Okay. Thank you, then. Thank you very
much. All right. Take care.
Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.